In many ways, my experience sitting here today in a certain sense is sitting here as your own self. Really not as myself. At least not in the egoic sense of Bruce. But sitting here as this deep, deep presence that does nothing but love you. And it loves you so individually and so specifically and so completely. The best way to describe it is the sense of mother. The sense of truly loving you as your mother. And loving you in a certain sense as the infant you. Cradling you and somehow enveloping your entire being. Able to encompass your entire being, holding it, feeling it with all of what I would call my maternal being for your whole and absolute essence. And it allows a certain kind of extraordinary sensitivity to you and to your comfort and your sense of well-being. And it seems to know exactly what to do to hold you, to rock you, to reposition you, to touch your belly, to do whatever it takes to make you feel safe and present. It's an overwhelming experience to be that. It's so fascinating because every one of you is being loved totally as you, not as any generic form. But totally as you. That your being in all of its uniqueness is being completely embraced and acknowledged. And although it senses you as a kind of infant, the interesting thing is that your entire life history, for all of its complexity, for all of its drama, for all of its evolutionary growth aspect, is still an infant. As much as you think you are these mature beings in the world, you are truly infants in the eyes of the self. And the self loves and mothers your being in a way that is greater than anything your maternal, material, physical mother was able to do. Your physical mother is an embodiment of this, but an unconscious embodiment. It's an instinctual embodiment, and it does its best. Our mothers and our fathers do their best in their own way, but nothing can mother you as much as yourself mothers you. And the extraordinary thing about sitting with a teacher, and I can't quite tell you what's going on in this class, except that somehow this extraordinary mothering is occurring. This extraordinary sense of being with myself, which is you. And when I say myself, there is no Bruce in it. Bruce comes into play clearly during the day and much of the time. And I have to say, even in this teaching, there is Bruce, because Bruce is one with Bruce's or ourself. And in that regard, it's really important to understand your uniqueness is essential to the universe. Your being is unbelievably special to the universe. And so when I say there's no Bruce here, well, of course, that's not clearly true. There's a body speaking to you, and a mouth, and a personality, and a life history, and all of that. But it's so small compared to the vastness of being. And it's the vastness of being that is moving through this Bruce being that is speaking to you. And it is one continuum. It's not Bruce as a separate entity. It's Bruce as experiencing a sense of wholeness. I don't in any way claim to be whole. I know that there is wholeness there. But I do know what is coming through and being experienced is a kind of wholeness. And that wholeness incorporates you. And it wants one thing for you, one thing, and that is for you to awaken to who you are in the same way that I am sensing an awakening to who I am. And not only does it want it, my loving you today was the universe wanting it for you. I could feel in this class how much, if you will, God or being wants you to awaken to yourself. How deeply it loves you. How deeply it cares about you. How uniquely special you are. As unique and special as you want to be. As you think you are. That's the incredible part of this. You are absolutely as remarkable as you think you are in the deepest egoic sense. And yet you are so much more than that. It's not to eliminate that, it's to make that part of the vastness of you. There is no loss here. There is no loss. There's only, if you will, gain. Getting to that awakening is a very long and involved process for most of us. And I've been observing it now for 40 years in myself, and I'm seeing how it's this thread, this little twist, that little turn. You keep going through all of these little things, and every time you think you know it, or you know more, you think you know something, you go, oh, I'm awakening, or I am full of knowledge, I'm full of a kind of new wisdom. There's a kind of unbelievable ownership that starts to happen very early in the game. And of course, it's a very incomplete ownership. I am an awakened soul. I am working for God. I am a healer. I am a this or that. Well, it's true, you are, but it's in the most minute sense. But it's also in the truest sense. And there's this sense of identification with all these things we are along the path. But ultimately, what happens, I think, is that identification starts to break down. And you realize there's no ownership of this. It just is. And that this little egoic mind, which is going to do endless numbers of things to kind of own and have this and to feel you represent it. I'm a spiritual person. I'm a good person. I am a teacher. I am this and that. Fine. It's fine. But every identity of that nature only limits it. And at some point, the universe is going to wash that away. Until there is no ownership, there is just truth. It's not you, it's it. But you are part of it, really one with it. It expresses itself through you at any given moment, actually at all given moments. The process of awakening involves an unbelievable dance between wanting and not wanting. I sit in class and I watch some of you wanting it, working it, making an effort. And I go, whoa, stop it. You don't have to make an effort to have what you are. What's the effort? And yet the effort seems to be important. And I relate it to Rudy's class, when in the early days of the class, I would sit downstairs in the class, and I would sit there and go, I take my breath, oh, please help me to surrender, please help me, I want to open. I was so hungry to open. I would work and work, and Rudy would look at me, and I don't know what would happen, but I would just kind of explode with wanting. And I felt so good about myself because the explosion was such a release and so orgasmic in a way. And then I would go upstairs to sit with Rudy. We would have dinner and sit around, and he would start teaching again, but it seemed like a different kind of teaching. It wasn't quite such a effortful thing. And I would just kind of sit there, just relaxed. And that was always my class. My class wasn't downstairs working. My class was upstairs sitting, eating dinner, and being. It was that relaxation in Rudy's presence that made this work. However, I also had to be downstairs making the effort. So you can't say one is right and one is wrong. They seem to each have a part to play in the whole of this unfolding in all of us. But I can only tell you that when I sit with you and I see the effort, I keep going, how can I get beneath that effort and just touch the part of you that doesn't need to try, that just needs to be here? You got here. You brought yourself here. It's an amazing thing that you brought yourself here. Something in you said, I want to come here. And what's here? What is here? You want to come and sit with Bruce. What is Bruce? Well, Bruce truly disappears as deeply as Bruce can let go. And what appears, or what is available, is this just presence. So you've brought yourself to presence, or you've brought yourself to, if you want to look at it in a deeper sense, to yourself. You brought yourself to yourself. And then you sit here, having brought yourself to yourself, trying to be with yourself. All I can tell you is you're already with yourself. You've done it. Sit down and relax. Sit back. Take it easy. Be with yourself. Just, it's kind of like this. I often imagined in the early days, not early, but some years ago when I was teaching, like I was sitting in a chair with my legs crossed, like that. And it was some of the best teaching I ever did. And I realized after a long time that this formality of rigid yoga posture, it has a purpose, but in truth the attitude that you need to bring to that rigidity of sitting is one of cross-legged relaxation. Leaning back in your chair and just going, here I am. Now, clearly, some of the times when you do that, you are not present. What you're really doing is you're just kind of disconnecting. So there is a kind of balance, a kind of loose awareness. You don't let go of consciousness, you let go of rigidity. You become light with this. If you watch Dancing with the Stars, and I don't watch it very often, but I've watched it on the airplane, that's coming from New York on JetBlue. And it's really interesting to watch these rigid people dancing, learning to let go of that, learning to lighten up on their feet. It's wonderful. America responds to that. They respond to it because that's what we all want. We want all of us to stop being so rigid, so determined to win, so hungry, and you just follow the movement, the music, the lead. What's the lead? Who's leading you in your life? They present all these uptight dancers with somebody who's not uptight, who's really loose. And this loose person teaches you to be loose. And a teacher is dancing with you. The teacher is the loose dancer. Lighten up. You know, I've never been a good dancer, ever. But I'm a good teacher. and I sit with you in a loose state, and you can move with me, and let this inner energy just move. Feel it. It's so beautiful. It's so wonderful. And the experience of moving through the dance floor of the universe is one of the greatest joyous gliding experiences you will ever have. That's what this class is. It's not sitting here suffering. It's not sitting here going, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do this? It's just dancing. It's just being with yourself. It's enjoying yourself, because that's what yourself wants to be. It wants to be enjoyed and, if you will, enjoined. So you become one with that. And then your whole life becomes an expression of it. You will speak with people as that. You will live with people as that. You will do all your best, but you will also do it as you. Which means what? All of your imperfections, all of your personality traits, for better or for worse, are all going to be part of it. But so what? That's what it is. How could you be other than that? And after a while, you forgive yourself for your limitations, for not being a good dancer or a good this or a good that. It's just what, this is your construct. Be your construct. Be what you are. It's okay to be what you are, because yourself loves you as you are. And the parts that it wants to change, it will make sure you know about. It will talk to you about them. It will come at you. It will tell you, this part needs to be changed. Fix it. And what I do when I sit with you is I do fixing. I do repairs. I feel the part of you that's stuck, the part of you that's not working, the part of you that is caught in something from 30, 40 or more years ago. And I just feel it. I feel it in you. And it's a weight. It's a discomfort. It's a problem. And it's really something you're aware of, because all of us feel our discomforts, but we do everything to Tylenol them away. You don't want to get rid of your discomforts. You want to go to them, because they are the exact thing that's cutting you off from yourself. It's the avoidance of your discomforts that keep you from being one with you. It is your embrace of your discomforts. It's your sense of saying, this is what I am. And the incredible thing about discomfort, and I will even talk about it as real pain or real suffering, the incredible thing about discomfort, pain, and suffering is it gets your attention. And it gets your attention not to be avoided and discounted. It gets your attention so you pay attention. And everybody, he does the opposite in our lives. We do everything to avoid our discomfort. Don't avoid it. Face it. Be it. Enter it. The great lesson for me of this last year has been the power of suffering. I've had a really hard year. I haven't talked about it so much. But trust me, this has been a hard year. Internally. A lot of stuff that hits me where I live. And every bit of it has served my development as a person. Every bit of it, because at this moment in time, I cannot ignore or avoid my pain, suffering, or discomfort. I enter it. I accept it. I sit with it. And it is awful to sit with. It's awful. Nobody wants to sit with their stuff. But the greatest gift of life is the kind of pain you can't get away from, because you have to sit with it. There's nowhere to go. And what happens when you sit with it? I can only tell you. When you sit with your pain, it is a force field. It is a dynamic energy that releases you to yourself, because there's nowhere else to go. You go to yourself through pain, not around it. You cannot enter your being with Motrin, alcohol, sex, success, money. You can't get there with that. If anything, all of that creates false security, false sense of who you are. The only way to yourself is to go through the very things that you are endlessly in avoidance of, which is somehow these strange discomforts. What are these discomforts? They're little things that you've held on to since you were 4 years old. You know, somebody said to you were fat. And for 40 years, you think of yourself as fat. You're anorexic, but you think of yourself as fat. Only by going through that pain and sitting in that little space of being fat, Can you finally break through the illusion of your own discomfort? Can you finally get to some truth about yourself? Or you're a bad girl, or you're a bad boy, or you're stupid, or you're whatever. All of these things create these little holding patterns inside you that are the essence of your tension. And they've been weaving themselves into you from time immemorial. And the only way to unweave all of this stuff, which is your false sense of self, really, is to look at it and sit with it and let it express itself. And the thing that's amazing about meditation is it wipes away everything else for half an hour or an hour. And there you are sitting, and all these strange feelings come up. Your old tensions. A lot of people say, why do I want to meditate if it's only going to cause me pain? Why is pain coming up in meditation? It's coming up because it's there. And because for the first time in your life or in the period of a week or a day, you have time to just look at it. And it's not there to punish you. It is there because it will lead you to something. So when you sit in this class and you sit and meditate, relax. Dance with your restriction, and what you'll feel, I can't make that move. That's too hard. My body doesn't want to go that way. But your partner will take you and say, you can do that. And it will take you right into that restriction, right into that tension, right into that tightness in the lower back, whatever it is. And it will just go, here. And it will make a move, and suddenly you're free of that tension, and you realize, I can make that move. I can release that tension. But you could not have done it. You could not have done it before someone helped you take the lead and show you that it was possible. That's the great gift of teaching, and it's the great gift of spiritual work. And even if you're sitting on your own at home, meditating by yourself, you are not alone, because your ultimate dancing partner is you. And it's sitting right there with you, and it will take you right to that place that you can't move, that is too difficult, that is painful, that is scary. It'll take you right there and say, come on, let's try, let's relax, wiggle your toe. It breaks you into this move that you didn't even know you could do, and suddenly you're free of a whole idea of yourself that releases you into becoming a better dancer, meditator, person. That's this process. And it's going to continue until one day you sit down and you realize who you are. And I know, I felt it so strongly in this class today, and feel it so often as I teach. This awakening is occurring for each of you. It is going on as we speak. It's going on, and you are compelled for it to go on because you keep bringing yourself to the table and asking for it to go on. And yes, it's a long process. Yes, some of you have been working 20 years and 30 years and 40 and 50 years, what, maybe 50 lifetimes. But I can only tell you, the unweaving of all of this stuff takes what appears to be time. We have time in this lifetime to do all of the work. And that's what we're doing. Everybody sitting in this room is doing it. We're all learning how to wake up to who we are. It's really all we're doing, unless we're doing the opposite, which is hiding and running and pretending this isn't there to be done. But you wouldn't be here if you didn't understand the value. You wouldn't be here if you weren't drawn to it. And all I can tell you is, something is going on here. I cannot tell you exactly what it is, but it's going on, and it's here for you. So, thank you. Questions today, anybody? Wendy?
I'm looking at a number of life-changing decisions, change of career, change of city. It's driving me crazy. So locked in my mind about it, and spinning with all the considerations, that clarity is completely evading. And I have a little bit of time. It's not that these are decisions that need to be made. But too. And I keep trying to just get quiet and reach for clarity, but even reaching for clarity just sends me right back into the spin. So I'm at odds, and asking for your guidance.
The only guidance at the moment would be don't make a move without some clarity. The thing that's operating in you is a profound expression of your discomfort. And it's looking in the world to find release from something that will not be released in the world. It has to be released internally. It's just suffering. You're trying to avoid a kind of suffering, and that suffering is a gift, and trying to get away from it. As much as I understand why you would want to get away from it, and as much as I understand the urgency of that, it's really experiencing a little bit what a butterfly experiences when it's still in the chrysalis. It's not comfortable in there. The reason a butterfly comes out of the chrysalis is because there's no room to breathe, there's no room to move. It's just awful experience in there. And then finally, it just goes okay, and it flies out of the chrysalis and becomes what it was supposed to be. You're still in the chrysalis, and everything in you wants out. But let the butterfly finish its development, and then it will happen very naturally. Also, it's your mind that tells you this is big. You know, it's the mind that says this is big, this is important, this is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. The mind is so self-absorbed and so limited in its perspective, it's hard to understand how little the mind knows. And the mind is basically a response energy to feeling. The mind examines feelings, and our feelings are the one thing we tend to have very little detachment from. We have detachment a little bit from our mind. When we sit in class, we can let go of mind much more easily than feelings. Feelings start to come up, and we define ourselves as feelings, really, more than anything else. It's not I think, therefore I am. It's I feel, therefore I am. And that those feelings are so intimate and personal, and some of them are so wonderful, and some are so uncomfortable, and we are in endless dance and dialogue with those feelings. The trick is to start to hover over your feelings, hover over them, just like a landscape, like imagine yourself as a cloud looking over your feelings. Rather than being in them, just observe them. Because they're harder to observe from the inside. You have to kind of rise above them, like laying out over the landscape of your body and looking down at all of your feelings and go, oh, this is that really awful feeling that's over in my chest, and this is the weird feeling that's in my thigh, and this is the awful feeling in my head, and this is the beautiful feeling in my chest. And you just watch them. It's really interesting. It's a really important part of spiritual development, starting to be able to be distinctly separate from or in observation of your feelings. And then, of course, to begin to be aware of who it is or what it is that's observing it. But most of us, that's a real failure in our spiritual lives, because we take our feelings as being more important than anything else. We make the feeling, this discomfort, this, I can't stand this, I gotta move, I gotta get another job, go to another city, I gotta get another partner, all, you know, that drives people's lives. If you could just relax for a minute, rise above and float above that feeling, you'll see it for what it is. It's just a tension. It's just a passing dark cloud going through the body. And it has its life, and then it has it, and then it's over. It comes and goes. We make huge decisions from these feelings, and they really, really complicate our lives. Because we make a decision as though this thing is real and eternal. I will always feel this unless I change it. The truth is, it will change. And you don't have to do very much of anything. You need to be you in observation of all this. And if you truly do need to change, the signal to change won't be these heavy emotions. There'll be a very simple clarity that will say to you in very unquestioning terms, do this, do this. And you'll know. And it will be so clear there won't be any conflict about doing it, because yourself spoke to you. And you spoke, it spoke to you not in these emotional terms, but in very clear, bell-ringing terms. This is what you should do. And you know it, and you do it. To live your life guided by, led by the dancer of your true nature, is to be in endless tune with, harmony with, and in an absolutely glorious performance in the world. And that's what we're trying to do. And when you get to that point, you'll know it, and there won't be any pain about the choices, because choices made from emotion often create more emotion. And those can create a lot of disturbance that goes on for a long time in people. And so, pay attention. Anyone else?
Yeah, I think when you have this discomfort, you know, for me a lot of it's, you know, fear and anxiety. But can you, I like to see what you're saying, observing, getting above it, and waiting, kind of letting higher self tell you what to do. Is there anything that you can actively say to it or to yourself?
Yeah, well, again, because this year presented me with a level of, I will call it fear, regret, remorse, God knows what, a lot of stuff all going on inside my body. And it was unbearable. In the middle of the night it was unbearable. During the day it was unbearable. And I just sat there, because I've been doing this for so long, and I just said, well, I don't have any escape mechanism. And I just kept sitting with it. And what happened in this sitting with it was that it separated from me, if you will. I didn't do anything. I just didn't avoid it. And it let go. Suddenly I was like above it. Just, it's like a little bit like when they put you under in a hospital, only you're awake. You know, they suddenly, all this pain, they give you a little shot and suddenly, oh, there's the pain over there. If you've ever had nitrous oxide, it's like, oh, there's pain over there. Doesn't hurt me. I can feel somewhere how that, I can see the pain, I can touch the pain, but it doesn't bother me. It's kind of like that, only it's self-induced. Self-induced means that you have willfully and openly said yes to what is. And what is in this particular moment is fear, hesitation, doubt, whatever, huge emotional sort of conflict and rage of a storm-like thing on the surface of your body, really. And there's a part of you that's watching it. People's biggest mistake is they get in the middle of it and they freak out. And they freak out and make these crazy decisions that therefore create more problems and more difficulties. And the storm just keeps brewing and unfolding, and you're in an endless rainstorm. And all you have to do is just go yes to it. And what happens is it allows you to rise above it. Rudy called it transcendence. And the storm is still there raging, but you're not feeding it. And if it's meant to go away, it will. If it's got to stay there, it will. And you may have to re-enter it. If you re-enter it, do it consciously. You bring awareness to it and say, I am in a storm. It's really interesting what happens when you're in a storm consciously. It's not the same as being in a storm hovering, you know, trying to hide. Suddenly it's almost like singing in the rain. I'm singing in the rain. It's that attitude that changes everything. Rain, hover, you know, hide and run away from it, or tap dance and splash and enjoy it. That's the difference. And that separation in you is what allows that to take place. And that separation is not, you can't separate, that's running. All you can do is enter it and the separation occurs. It's a stupid, unexpected, irrational thing. Why would separation occur by going into it? I can't tell you that. But that's how it works. Pain has to be entered, not run from. Suffering has to be embraced and accepted, not avoided. And that's how you become one with yourself. And it works. Josh?
I understand the idea of entering your suffering. I feel like I've been having a lot of, I guess, dark and heavy emotions this weekend. And I've been with my girlfriend and not wanting to share them with her. Very consciously not sharing my suffering with her. order to spare her having to deal with my suffering. And I wonder whether that's appropriate or whether it's I'm a better boyfriend to share my suffering with her and to let her into what I'm going through.
Here's the better boyfriend. The better boyfriend is to say, excuse me, but I have some suffering that I'm dealing with. Not to share it with her or anybody, if you can avoid that. Most of us, all we want to do is share our suffering because we think that helps us get rid of it. All it does is makes everybody else suffer. What you want to do is deal with your suffering internally, individually, because your suffering is between you and God, not between you and your girlfriend. And that's intelligent, conscious life does that. People, half the reason the world is in such an unhappy state is that everybody shares their suffering with everybody around them. If we just took the responsibility of dealing with it ourselves, it would be a completely different world. Because it's between us and our Maker, our God, our self. That's what the suffering is, and it's not a bad thing. It feels bad. It feels horrible. Nobody wants it. But when you finally say, this is what it is, you understand it's how the world works. Suffering has, it's part of the dynamic of yin-yang. You know, there's yin-yang in the middle zone where it's a little discomfort, a little happiness. It's a little bit this, it's a little bit that. And that's where people kind of want to live. It's a lot of people. But then sometimes it goes to the larger extremes. It's like great happiness and great suffering. And nobody wants to live there. And it's just, it's too uncomfortable. And so rather than understand that that too is yourself, that bigness, that drama, that melodrama of your life is part of something vast and wonderful. And only when you go yes to that and take it internally and let it move through your system do you really get its value. Otherwise, you just spread it around and create a world with so much opposition and tension and conflict and suffering that you never can find your way out of it. Because it's just so unendingly extreme that you don't know where to go, and you just keep going in all the wrong directions. Only when you find someone like a teacher or a teaching or something that tells you, bring it to me, bring it to yourself, talk to God. Talk. That's what I mean. AA does that. You know, you bring it to God. You sit down and you go, this is my dialogue with you. You know, Teviev in Fiddler on the Roof, he just wants to know, you know, why God is creating all these problems for him. And he talks directly to God. We need to do that. We don't have to lay it on our girlfriends or anybody else. It's a sign of conscious living not to do that. Okay? Anybody else?
That I've been living next door to a 6,500 square foot house that's been being built, and it's been a lot of my spiritual work this last year because it's been really noisy and intrusive. And now I'm to the place where I just want to move. Like, that sometimes, you know, I sort of spent the year working with it, going into it, and now it just seems like there does come a point where it is just then time to get up sometimes and walk away as well. Even after you've gone into it.
Sure, well, because what happened in going into it, and you can hear it in your voice as you say it, is you've arrived at clarity.
Yeah. Okay.
Clarity is, I shouldn't be here anymore.
Right, okay.
But how did you get to clarity? Not by, I can't stand this guy, I'm going to move, I'm going to do this and do that. You would have moved with so much fury and so much anger, it would have just traveled with you to the next place, and you would have had a neighbor building a house that was 10,000 square feet. That's how it works. But if you just go, this isn't working, time to move on, you move with clarity, and you take clarity to your next location. And that clarity is yours.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Okay, sorry guys. Long class. Thank you all for coming. See you next Sunday if you're around.